Siren. 61 days after the death of Talon. For the dream of a voice, I have crossed the night and walked the road to the horizon. Songs of the Lost, Canto 12, by Aldera Sulcado, Unification Era Terra. The Battle of Talon was a battle that might never have been. In the wake of the Iron Warrior's bombardment, Talon was a hell made real. Viral agents had reduced all biological matter to slime. Death blew in the wind and rolled in the water. Nothing lived or could live on the surface. Some, the fortunate or the cursed, did survive. Sealed beneath the ground in shelters, the last humans on Talon breathed air that had never touched the land above, woke to yellow machine light, and heard silence crowd around them like the promise of oblivion. On the surface, the Iron Warriors descended into the hell they had made. War machines crisscrossed the desolation, sensors reaching into the wind and finding no answer. Beneath the earth, the survivors readied to venture out of their shelters. Skinned in envirosuits and sealed inside tanks, they went to the surface and discovered the destroyers of their world had remained. A war of revenge began. Squadrons of tanks raided the surface, killed Iron Warriors, and sank back beneath the ground. Fresh corpses dissolved into the blighted soil, and the husks of vehicles became home to the wind. Yet still, this was not a true battle. Perturabo had sent only a fraction of his legion's strength to the surface. The defiant raiders took their toll, but the Iron Warriors always had more to take the place of the dead. Without aid, the survivors would dwindle, and their struggle would pass into the unknown void between history and memory. To make it the battle whose name would echo down the millennia would take more. It would take armies greater than those that had survived the first attack. It would take those loyal to the Emperor, knowing that there was a war here to fight. It would take an event around which history could pivot.
Can anyone hear me?
Gat released the transmit key and waited. Static washed out of the speaker grill. Kulok watched as the young man closed his eyes for a second and took a tired breath.
Please, acknowledge if you can hear.
The static returned. Gat looked up at Kulok. Red veins crazed the whites of the boy's eyes. It seemed as if he were about to say something, but he turned and rested his forehead on the knuckles of his hands. Pieces of machinery covered the pressed metal table in front of Gat. Brass-cased devices clicked with the sound of turning cogs. Tangles of wires linked the equipment to a generator unit on the floor. Kulok could smell the metallic tang of electrics shorting out, and the purr of the generator unit set his teeth on edge. The Promethean lamp hanging from the low roof spluttered, and the light dimmed. Kulok glanced at it, holding the small tongue of light in his gaze for a second until it settled. The lighting system in the shelter had died 2 days ago. The orange glow of Promethean lamps was the only light they had now. Thankfully, the air reprocessors were still working. Kulok took a breath and rubbed his eyes. The air stank even after weeks of breathing it. What he would give for a cup of water that did not taste of chemicals. A brief memory of the snow water cellars filled his mind, their bandoliers of glasses glinting in the sunlight, the frosted canisters balanced on their shoulders as they walked the Crescent City's streets. He looked up at the sound of the hatch opening. Sabir stepped into the room, glanced at Kulok, and closed the hatch behind him. He looked more like a vagrant than a prefectus in Talon's administration. An expanding patina of stains covered the older man's robes. Folds of skin sagged from his chin. His grey eyes held sticky moisture at the corners, and grease sheened his grey hair. To be fair, no one else in the small shelter looked any better. Kulok was sure, though, that the sour twist to Sabir's lips had been there long before they had ended up buried down here.
"How's the seer?"
asked Kulok.
"Dreaming,"
Sabir shrugged.
"Dying?"
Kulok nodded. He had expected no different. The astropath had been delirious since the bombardment. Sabir had said that the seer rarely used his gifts anymore and had kept to his chambers in the city's sensorium. It had only been the screaming that had reminded the scribes that the astropath was there when the bombardment had started. Now the old seer just slept soundlessly in a coma. He would not last much longer, Kulok was certain of that. Already wisp thin and creased with age, the astropath's pulse was weakening with every passing day. It was just another reason to find out whether they were the only people still alive on Talon. Kulok glanced back at Gat. The boy was staring at the vox dials, mouth still, finger unmoving on the transmission key.
"Keep trying,"
said Kulok. Gat did not respond.
"Do another sweep through the major channels, then start back on the minor ones."
He turned to the doorway and placed his hand on the locking wheel.
"No one can hear us,"
said Gat. Kulok could hear the exhaustion in the words and the tremble of anger hidden just beneath its surface.
"We have to keep trying,"
said Kulok as he pulled the hatch open.
"Give the kid a break,"
said Sabir.
"We have to,"
began Kulok, but Sabir cut him off.
"We?"
Sabir's lip twisted back from his yellow teeth.
"When did you start to talk for everyone?"
He shook his head.
"You're not even supposed to be here. And now you are saying what we must do."
Kulok took a step towards the Prefectus. Sabir flinched back, eyes widening. Kulok stopped. "You're not supposed to be here." It was true, of course. Kulok was in the shelter by luck rather than design. The shelter was one of the smaller ones, buried under one of the Sapphire City's grand sensoriums. He had been waiting in the second vestibule on the ground floor when the bombs fell. According to the city records, he owed tax and fines dating back over a decade. He had been avoiding the summons for the last year, but at last a magistrate had tired of Gulok's protests. Bondsmen had come for him and made it clear that it did not matter that Kulok had seen service in the Crusade. He was coming with them, whether he liked it or not. He owed those bondsmen his life. When the roof in the sensorium had begun to shake, he had known what it was. He had been on the surface of Desh when the fleet had opened up on the fortress cities, and the memory of that moment pulled him from his seat as the sirens began to sound. He had not known that the bombardment was viral, but a fleet could reduce an unshielded city to rubble with less exotic weapons. He had found the entrance to the shelter and was just through the door as the biohazard alarms added to the din. The hatch had locked behind him, and he had found himself staring into the eyes of the few others who had found safety. Most were scribes and officials, junior for the most part, and all terrified. A few, like Sabir, had the trappings of authority, but not a trace of the will to use it. None of them had known what to do. All of them wanted someone to tell them what to do, almost as much as they wanted it all not to be happening. Kulok had filled that need, though that did not stop some, like Sabir, resenting his assumed command. Kulok sighed and turned away from the Prefectus.
"I'm just trying to get through this,"
said Kulok.
"The astropath will die without help, and we won't be far behind. We are a handful of people buried under a city. No one will come looking for us. 2 weeks, and we will be living in the dark, listening to the last air hiss from the vents. That is, if the water systems keep working."
He turned back to Sabir.
"Do you like that idea? Does that calm your concerns about authority, Prefectus Sabir?"
Sabir just stared back. Kulok shook his head.
"Keep trying, please,"
he said to Gat, and stepped towards the hatch.
"It won't work,"
said Gat. Kulok turned back to look at the young man.
"I said it before I started. This set is for surface use,"
said Gat.
"It just does not have the power to punch through the ground above."
Kulok said nothing for a moment.
"And if it was on the surface?"
I don't know. Gat exhaled and ran his hand through his hair. Maybe. But it would depend how close the receiver was. If there was someone else close by or with a big receiver, they might hear. But there might be no one to hear.
Gulok heard Sabir start to say something.
What about reaching the Sapphire City, or Zephyr? Asked Gulok. There were big shelters under those military grade.
Gat shook his head. It's 600 kilometers to the Sapphire City, 1,000 to Zephyr. The signal won't make that.
Gulok nodded slowly, an idea hardening in his mind.
Get the Vox into the armored carrier vehicle.
Gat frowned, then his eyes went wide.
You can't go out, said Sabir.
Gulok turned to look at the older man. There was fear in the Prefectus's watery eyes. They'd all seen the atmospheric warning lights shining red above the outer hatches.
We must do this, said Gulok. You will kill us! The vehicle ramp is airlocked, said Gulok calmly. We have transport. No guns, but it's enviro-sealed. There is a decontamination gate in the airlock. We probably have enough power to make all of those work. You can't!
A tremble of pleading edged Sabir's voice, and the skin under his stubble was pale.
2 weeks, Sabir, said Gulok. After that, we might as well open the doors and let whatever's outside in. You can stay here with the rest. Look after the seer.
A red flush spread across Sabir's cheeks as fear shifted back to anger.
Who says you...
I say, Sabir, said Gulok,
and watched the words sink in.
I say.
Lycus slept and remembered. There is nothing to discuss, he had said, and held his gaze steady. Above him, the man on the throne of Lapis shifted and did not meet Lycus's eye. The room had felt crowded, even though it was large enough to hold several hundred. Golden fabric hung from the copper-lined ceiling, cutting the space into channels that led the eye to the windows which opened onto the views of the Crescent City beyond. Blue and green tiles covered the floor. The old man who sat on a green alabaster throne at the chamber's centre was still, rigid with formality. Delisarius, victor of the Tempest conflagration, now governor militant of Talarn, wore red armour shaped like the toned muscles of ancient heroes. Silver thunderbolts cut across the lacquered metal. Struts and pistons ran down his limbs, and every now and then a bellows hiss of air escaped from a vent in the side of his torso. Set behind a wide gorget, the governor's face was blade thin. The only other flesh that was visible was Delisarius's right hand, where his rings of office glittered from spider-thin fingers. But it was his eyes that said more than anything else. Grey and watery, they fixed on nothing, as if only wanting to see the world in glances. Delisarius was a hero. Lycus knew that. But the governor looked as though mundanity had leached away his past strength. A clutch of advisers, Lycus presumed that is what they were, stood around the throne. They all looked wealthy, soaked in fine fabrics, jewellery glinting on their fingers and necks. A few exchanged glances. Those that had looked at Lycus had done so for only an instant. He stood 5 paces from the base of the throne, his helmet under his right arm, his left hand resting on the pommel of the blade sheathed at his waist. Jagged ridges and gouges of battle damage ran under the yellow paint of Lycus's armour. Glossy pleats of flesh twisted across his cheeks, and his mouth was a twisted gash over broken teeth. Lycus could smell the mingled fear in the human sweat. He did not like this. He never liked this. But it was a necessity. He had a rising concern that he was going to have to be everything they feared him to be. One of the crowd of advisers took a step forward, dared a glance at Lycus's face, and then dropped his eyes. The man had a pinched pale face the colour of milk. His lips twisted before he spoke.
With all humbleness, my lord...
I am not a lord. Lycus's voice cut the man's words like a sword blow. Silence filled the heartbeat after he spoke. Lycus nodded to the governor militant.
He,
is a lord. The fabric of the advisor's robes was trembling. Lycus noticed that the cloth was embroidered leaf patterns in iridescent turquoise on black. He presumed that the man was deciding how afraid he was of a space marine. The advisor licked his lips and opened his mouth. Not scared enough, thought Lycus.
With all humbleness, said the advisor again.
The words were so honeyed they almost tripped from the man's tongue.
There are a number of things that must be resolved before your request can be considered.
Lycus remained silent. The advisor who had spoken licked his lips again. My lord Delisarius, said Lycus, turning his gaze slowly back to the governor militant. Who are these people? The governor militant looked around at the crowd of advisers, and then back to Lycus.
Representatives of the Caliphers and trade dynasties of Talon, said Delisarius.
Lycus saw a flash of emotion ripple across the wrinkled skin.
They are concerned with the practical complexities of what you are saying.
Loyalty is not complex, said Lycus.
The governor's eyes met Lycus's gaze. He gave a small nod.
But its workings are,
said a heap of a man smothered in saffron silk. Lycus looked at the man and was surprised to see that there was no fear in the amber-flecked eyes. The saffron-clad advisor gestured with a fat hand heavy with silver and gold.
What will it mean for this world? You say that we must mobilize and look to our defenses, that we must expend resources fortifying our planet and our system.
The advisor opened both his hands as he made the final point, as if expressing honest sorrow. The other advisor, with the sour milk face, filled the pause before Lycus could reply.
And you say that we must stand ready to send forces wherever you think they are needed.
Lycus nodded, allowing his left hand to shift to the pommel of his sword.
That is what you must do.
We do not have those resources,
said the pale-faced man with a grimace. Behind him there was a ripple of fabric and a trembling of jewels as the advisers nodded and muttered agreement.
Our coffers have run dry for years,
said the fat man with a shrug.
Things are not what they were.
Immaterial, said Lycus. His face had hardened. Are you willfully blind to what the galaxy has become?
This was a primary-grade staging planet, a crusade hub. There are troops here and weapons and materiel. The governor gave a small nod, but the fat man gave a brief laugh that sent his cheeks and chins shaking. Lycus felt a caustic tingle in his muscles and took a careful breath to keep his anger chained.
Scraps! Mismatched units stranded here. Equipment that has no operators. Weapons that have no bullets. Bullets that have no weapons.
Saderni, began Delisarius.
A little colour flushed into the governor's withered face. Lycus turned, his entire presence now focused on the advisers. The crowd seemed to shrink, a low trembling running through the throng.
Are you saying that you cannot, or that you will not serve your emperor?
Lycus's voice was low, hard-edged. As he spoke, he readied himself, preparing his muscles to draw and fire his bolt pistol. Am I too late? The question rolled through him as the conditioned kill reflexes slotted into place. Is there something other than greed here? Have the agents of the traitors already been here? Are these people more than blind? Will this be like Cantaridine again?
No!
Roared Delisarius. The governor was on his feet.
This world is loyal to Terra, and we shall...
The alarm screamed. The advisors froze. The noise intensified as siren after siren rose in chorus. The governor was standing where he had risen from his throne, his mouth opening. Lycus was two strides across the room before the second siren started. The advisers had not moved. They were standing, hands pressed against their ears. In Lycus's mind, facts and instinct formed conclusions as his muscles pushed him forwards. The alarm was for an orbital bombardment. Munitions fired from orbit took time to cross a planet's shell of air. But not much time. They would have minutes if they were lucky. He seized the governor. The man's puzzled expression twisted to shock as Lycus lifted him from the ground and turned towards the room's doors. The advisers were moving now, running like silk-draped cattle. Lycus surged through them without breaking stride. The room's doors were copper-plated plastile, carved with bas-reliefs of vines curling through trees. Lycus felt the impact jolt through his body as his shoulder crumpled the doors and ripped them from their frames.
"What is happening?"
gasped Elisarius. Lycus was dragging him with him as he ran.
"The enemy is here, Lord," he said.
Out beyond the high windows of the palace, the sky brightened with the light of fresh, false suns.
"Marshal Lycus,"
the voice said nearby. He blinked, and the half of his mind that had fallen through the waking dream of the past meshed with the half that had remained awake. The room around him was small and bare. A lumen globe shone with a dirty light above the only door. In the weeks since the bombardment, this had been his sanctuary in the few moments he took for rest. He was alone here, a last warrior of the 7th Legion on Talarn. No word had come from the Light of Inwit after the attack. That the strike cruiser might have survived was a possibility. That it might have reached the system edge, and even now be bringing word of the death of Talarn to forces loyal to the Emperor, was also a possibility. Both seemed unlikely to Lycus. His brothers were dead, his ship lost, and he was alone amongst the remains of humanity on a dead world.
"Marshal!"
came the voice again, and the chamber door hinged inwards. The human who stepped through was shivering despite the warm air. The man's face was pale under a shaved scalp, his uniform ill-fitting and stained with dry sweat.
"Yes,"
said Lycus. The aide stopped where he was and began twitching his weight from foot to foot. The man was coming down off a stim-high. Lycus had noticed that a lot of the officers in the Rakhab fortress had taken to using narcotics to counter the effects of fatigue.
"The Governor Militant requests your presence,"
said the aide carefully. Lycus watched the aide try to remain still, and then stood. His armor hummed to full life as he moved. His bolter came up with him and clamped to his thigh with a snap of magnetic force. He moved towards the door. The aide followed.
"Where is the Governor Militant?"
asked Lycus as he ducked through the door.
"In the main communication hub,"
said the aide, running to keep up. Lycus looked around at the man as he strode on.
"The signal arrays have heard something,"
said the man.
"Something new."
"Again,"
said Kulok, raising his voice over the growl of the vehicle's power plant. Gat shook his head and gestured at a gauge beside the drive column.
"The power reserves are almost empty. We are draining the fuel."
The suit muffled Gat's words. Even through the internal vox, he had to raise his voice to be heard over the rumble of the carrier's engine. The machine was a big beast with high sides and a blunt nose painted in white and blue. The rest of its slab metal hide had been a pale grey, stamped with the emblems of the Crescent City's administration. It had been intended as an emergency transport for officials in the case of a mass riot. Its colours had reflected that purpose, a bold statement of authority in the face of anarchy. The heraldry had not lasted long after they reached the surface. After a few minutes of rolling through the fog-drowned streets, Gulok had noticed grey sludge running down the glass of the vision slits. The air was dissolving the paint as it passed over them. He had not mentioned it to Gat. The boy was rattled enough already. Gulok looked at the fuel gauge. They had drained the power reserves, and now were running everything off the engines. Most of the main tank was gone, and they would have to use the reserve to get them back to the shelter.
"There is enough," he said. "Keep transmitting."
"What if we get lost?" asked Gat. "What if it takes us more fuel to get back than it took to get here?"
Gulok looked at him for a long moment. He had stopped the carrier on top of a hill. Where exactly in the city they were, he was not sure. Possibly in the foothills, close to the Dawn Tower. They had moved through streets heaped with slime, sliding and skidding every few metres. The buildings had loomed through the fog, glass clinging to the empty eyes of windows. He had thought he had recognised a water fountain, its tiered pools brimming with black water. 20 years he had walked the streets of the Crescent City, from the sprawl on the slopes of the mountains to the river forks. He knew its smells and the feel of its stones beneath tyre and foot. But the Crescent City no longer existed. The buildings and streets no longer formed a city. They had become something else, a tangle of monoliths set to watch over the dead. The route back to the shelter only existed as a set of memorized landmarks and distances in Gulok's mind. If they ran low on fuel, or if he forgot the route, then they would die on the surface.
"Send one more transmission," he said. "Then we move out."
Gat looked at him, suddenly uncertain, as Gulok sat back in the drive cradle.
"One more?"
asked Gat.
"If no one has heard us yet,
just send it," said Gulok.
If the boy was looking to protest again, Gulok did not see. He had closed his eyes, feeling the big frame of the carrier shake around him as the engines turned over.
"This is the Crescent City Sensorium Shelter. Please respond. We require assistance and evacuation. Survivors include senior administrators."
Gat paused. Static buzzed over the open vox.
"Look, we have an old man dying, and the rest of us aren't far behind. He is an astropath. Not that that will make any difference, because you can't hear this. There is no point to the message. You aren't there. No one is there."
He stopped. His finger still held on the transmission key for a second. Then he released it. The static died. He turned to look at Gulok and shrugged, as though to preempt whatever rebuke was coming. Gulok met the boy's eyes. They were hard with defiance behind the fogged eyepieces.
"All right," said Gulok softly. "All right."
He reached out and punched a control. The engine noise cycled down to silence.
"We wait an hour," said Gulok. "Then move."
"Why wait?"
"I need to sleep," said Gulok, voice hard.
Then he shook his head and turned away to pull himself out of the driver's cradle.
"I need to sleep."
He lay down in the crew compartment. The light coming from the armored view slits was grainy yellow. He rested his head against his hands and closed his eyes. Sleep drifted up into his thoughts, filling his head with memories of clear skies and swift water.
"Can you hear that?"
asked Gat. Gulok sat up, his half-formed dreams fading slowly. He glanced at the vox transmitter, but it sat silent. Gat was sitting up, head tilted to the side. Gulok blinked, opened his mouth, and heard it. A thin, high wail slid into his ears. On and on it rolled, ululating up and down, each note sliding to the next in drawn-out rhythm. For a second he thought it was coming from inside the carrier, but it was coming from every direction, seeping in through the hull and his suit. After a long moment, he gave a cold bark of laughter. Gat twitched his head towards him.
"It's the city's attack alarms," said Gulok. "The power to them must still be running. They're still sounding the warning."
Gat shivered but said nothing. Gulok settled onto the floor of the crew compartment and closed his eyes again. Around him, the sound of sirens stretched out into the dark behind his eyes, and dreams of the dead city came to claim him. The adepts and officers turned to look at Lycus as he entered the command chamber. He ignored them, crossing the space with fluid strides. A pillar of machinery thrust from the centre of the floor, hung with cabling and tended by two engine seers. The room smelt of human sweat and ozone. This was the true heart of the Rakhab Fortress, and the centre for the war of vengeance against the Iron Warriors. Buried under the mountains to the north of the Crescent City, the Rakhab was vast. Its vaults extended down to the root of the mountain range and spread through the rock in a warren of caverns and tunnels. It had been used as the seat of the Great Crusade in this volume of space, but dust and silence had gathered in its halls before the Iron Warriors had come. Now, atrocity had given it new purpose. A few of the officers exchanged glances. A few others just stared at him. Delisarius stood beside the stack of machinery at the centre of the chamber, his aides and senior officers clustered around him. He turned to look at Lycus and gave a small nod. Some of the officers around the Governor Militant hesitated in the middle of saluting. Delisarius's greeting, both curt and familiar, confused them. Most of them were unseasoned and strung out by the demands of the last few weeks. These were the commanders of soldiers left behind by war and history, flotsam generals, now called to lead in a war that seemed already lost. Most were already confused by the presence of a transhuman in their midst. Lycus's nebulous level of authority within the leadership of the Loyalists was not helping. Lycus pointed at where a green transmission light pulsed on the bronze communication dais.
"When did the transmission come in?"
he asked.
"We picked it up 40 minutes ago,"
said a Red Road adept in a dead machine voice.
"It could have been transmitting longer. The transmission is poor quality. The probability is that they are using limited range equipment beyond its ordained rating. Transmission ceased 10 minutes ago. We have a vox capture of the full duration of the transmission."
"Put it on speaker," said Lycus. An officer in the crimson uniform of the Talarn Governance Command glanced at Delisarius from her place beside the communications dais.
"Put it on,"
said the Governor Militant. The voice filled the chamber a second later.
"This is the Crescent Sensorium. Respond. Assistance."
Static wailed and chopped through the voice. Lycus could hear the tiredness in the words. A young male human, 20 years perhaps, wrung out and talking by rote rather than from hope.
"He just repeats the same message," said the officer.
She was called Sasabaka, Lycus recalled.
"You have composited a meaning?" asked Lycus.
"They claim to be transmitting on behalf of the Crescent City Sensorium Shelter," said Sasabaka. "They are asking for assistance and evacuation of 12 administrative personnel. Senior personnel, to be precise."
"What was the size of the sensorium shelter?" asked Lycus.
"Small," said another officer, eyes darting to Lycus and away.
"It was a bolt hole built in case of civil unrest. It could house 50 at the most, but it's not equipped for prolonged use under these conditions."
"Does it have any strategic reserves or capabilities?" Sasabaka shook her head.
"None."
"It is a burrow built to make the great and the good feel safe," said a cold voice.
Every one of the officers turned to look at Delisarius. The governor turned to Lycus, one grey eyebrow arched above his eyes.
"It was pointless. That is worthless."
"Then why summon me?"
asked Lycus. The recorded voice of the transmission cracked and spat through the silence.
"City Sensorium, please."
"Because of the last thing included in the transmission before it went off air," said Delisarius.
"Survivors include..."
Lycus held Delisarius's gaze, and for the first time noticed the glimmer of fire in the pale eyes.
"Include..."
The governor gave a small nod, and the ghost of a smile brushed across his wasted face.
"An astropath,"
said the voice from the static. Kulok started the carrier's engine, and the sound of the sirens vanished. Vibration kicked through the machine's body. He had slept for... he did not know how long he had slept for, and in most ways that mattered, it did not matter at all. Night was beginning to creep across the city. Beyond the view slits, the fog shimmered through decaying colours. That was not good. He ran through the landmarks that would lead them back to the shelter. He hoped that he could still find them in the failing light. Gat sat beside him, hunched and silent. Gulok paused, the engine rumbling through his bones.
"Gat,"
he said. The boy did not move.
"Try the vox again."
"Why?"
asked Gat.
"Because we are going back to die in a stinking hole in the ground," thought Gulok. "Because someone else must be out there. They must."
He spoke none of his thoughts.
"One last check," he said.
Gat was still for a long moment, then gave a gesture that was half a nod and half a shrug, and pulled himself back over to the vox transmitter.
"All right,"
said Gat.
"Did you respond?"
asked Lycus. The officer called Sasabaka shook her head.
"Not at first," she said. "The signal was poor quality and unclear. There seemed no point in responding to people who were going to be dead soon,"
said Lycus, his voice emotionless.
Indeed,
said Sasabarka. But after that final transmission?
We attempted to establish signal conjunction,
answered one of the tech priests,
but could not locate the transmission. The highest probability is that they ceased transmission.
But that could mean several things, said Delisarius carefully.
The lights blinked on the communication dais. The recorded voice had unwound into a dull hiss of static. No one said anything. No one needed to say anything. An astropath could mean that a message could be sent to other loyalist forces. Talarn's plight, and the presence of the full might of the Iron Warriors, could be a secret no more. It was a slim hope, a strand hanging by a single word spoken by a voice that might now belong to a dead man.
This is the Crescent City Sensorium Shelter, said Gat,
then paused, breathed slowly, and continued.
Can anyone hear this?
A gust of crackle came over the vox as Gat released the transmission key. Gulok waited. Nothing. Just the hiss of machine silence. After a long moment, he nodded to Gat.
We are moving,
he said, and engaged the engine. Gears meshed, and the machine lurched. A dark numbness was spreading through him, pulling his thoughts down into a toneless void. The vox crackled, and Gat reached for the power switch.
Crescent Shelter!
The voice reached through the static. Gat's hand froze. Gulok twisted in the drive cradle.
Here! Respond!
Gat did not move, transfixed by the sound coming from the speakers.
Confirm.
This is the Crescent City Shelter,
said Gat at last, and there were tears in the boy's words.
We hear you, Crescent Shelter, said the comms officer. Your location is confirmed. Prepare for relief force. Short-range communication will be on frequencies Daleth Sigma 2-1, redundancy Chi 4-7. Use encryption key listed on magenta code key for all future comms. Confirm and list back, Crescent Shelter.
Lycus listened as the shaking human voice listed back the details. Static bubbled up every few words, and it took several passes to be certain that both sides of the transmission had understood.
Wait for us, Crescent Shelter, said the comms officer at last. We are coming. Out.
Lycus waited for the signal noise to fade, and then turned to Delisarius.
You had already decided on a course of action?
The Governor Militant nodded. The rest of the human officers were watching silently, some busying themselves with minor tasks, others standing with stiff formality as the military ruler of Talarn and the Marshal of the 7th Legion spoke.
If they do have an astropath, this one action could change the course of this battle.
Lycus gave a single nod.
I will lead the ground operation. Thank you, Marshal Lycus, said Delisarius. If you succeed, Talarn will owe you a great debt twice over.
Lycus shook his head.
Service, loyalty, honor. These are both the debt and the payment.
Delisarius bowed his head briefly. Lycus turned, his thoughts shifting between calculations and threat assessments. The Crescent City Sensorium was 50 kilometers from the Rakhab's southern foothill entrance. In clear conditions, with Legion war machines, that distance could be crossed in under an hour. But he did not have the strength of his battle brothers with him.
Four vehicles, your fastest based on balance of ordnance, armor, weight, and reliability. Two main battle tanks, an assault carrier, and a machine with sky cover capability. A squad in environmental armor, void-hardened, if available. Your best crews and soldiers. Experience and fortitude weighted over rank. All ready to move out within 10 minutes.
Delisarius flicked his eyes at the officer called Sasabarka.
Make it so, Brigadier.
She saluted, but paused, frowning.
Is there a problem?
Asked Delisarius.
You have no capacity for evacuation of those in the shelter.
Lycus looked at her and nodded.
Well, that is because we are not going to evacuate them, he said.
Sasabarka looked at him, and he saw realization harden in her eyes.
The signal we heard, and those that we exchanged with the Crescent Shelter, they were in clear,
she said,
But we are not alone, said Delisarius. And if we heard them, there is a chance, a very good chance, that our enemies did too. And if they did, they will be coming, said Lycus. They will be coming to silence this one chance we have to send word to those loyal to the Emperor. Speed and strength, those are the only things that matter now. Our objective, and our only objective, is to reach this astropath, no matter the cost.
They're coming!
Said Gat, as soon as the inner door on the decontamination lock opened. Sabir and a cluster of the other survivors were waiting for them.
Gat bounded towards them, grinning, eyes dancing with exhaustion and adrenaline.
They're coming for us! A full relief force!
Sabir frowned and looked past Gat at Gulok.
Oh, it's true, said Gulok as he sealed the hatch.
He felt strangely empty. He'd not expected to feel like this, but then, had he expected to really make contact with anyone? Was it just a drive to survive, so deeply rooted in the meat of his species that had pushed him on, out, beyond the edge of hope? Now, with the promise of rescue a reality, he did not know how to feel, and every thought rang hollow in his head. Gat was babbling to Sabir and the others, voice loud and echoing off the rockcrete walls. Gulok moved past him and pulled Sabir to the side.
How is the seer?
He asked. Sabir blinked.
The same as before, no change.
Gulok nodded to himself. There was something itching at the back of his thoughts, something about the Vox exchange on the surface that did not fit or feel right.
Why do you ask?
Asked Sabir, as Gulok moved away.
They asked, he replied. They asked twice what his condition was.
He turned away before Sabir could reply. His feet carried him through the tunnels to the chamber where they had settled the astropath. The room had been intended as some kind of secure document storage. Metal-framed scroll racks lined the rockcrete walls, and a curation desk was bolted to one wall. The air was warm from the heat that bled through the wall from the main machine chamber. That was why they had chosen it. The astropath had been shivering since he had collapsed, just after they got him to the shelter. Skin near blue, teeth chattering. It was as though he was outside in an ice wind, rather than several meters below ground. They had wrapped him in blankets and put him in the warmest space they could find, but it had made no difference. Gulok closed the door and looked down at the old man. The astropath might not be old, of course. Perhaps he was no older than Gulok. He might even have been younger. There was just no way that you could think of him as anything but old. Not when you looked at him. Snow-white, liver-spotted skin hung in wrinkles from a narrow, hairless skull. Yellow teeth glinted from behind cracked lips. Empty sockets gathered shadows beneath a high brow. Skeletal hands locked in crooked fists beneath his chin. He had a name, according to Sabir. It was called Halakim. Gulok stared at the figure for several minutes before he was certain that the man was still breathing. Satisfied, he turned to pull the door open.
An eye of night.
Gulok whirled at the sound of the voice. The astropath had not moved. Gulok stood, unmoving, the sound of his rising heartbeat the only sound he could hear. Had he imagined the words? Was it the voice of his own exhaustion that had spoken? He took a step forward.
They see.
This time, Gulok saw the old man's lips move. He bent down, hairs rose across his skin, and he felt something brush across his face as though he had touched a cobweb.
Endless dark,
whispered the astropath.
It's cold. The stars are cold.
Can you hear me?
He said, unsure of what else to say.
I am here. I am with you.
The old man grabbed Gulok so fast that he did not have time to move before a skeletal hand was locked around his wrist. Freezing pain poured up Gulok's arm. He could not move. Blackness surrounded him, and he could see stars. But they were moving, swirling like insects, and beyond them something dark and sinuous coiled, clicking and purring as it glided closer and closer. He wrenched free, gasping, and the chamber was there again. The astropath's mouth was still moving, the empty eye sockets seeming to stare up at Gulok.
dust, hissed the astropath. Can't you hear the dust blowing on the wind? So dry, so cold under the dome of night.
The old man grimaced, and a sound that was half a cry and half a whimper came from his mouth. It was a sound of pain and despair, so sharp and pure that it cut through Gulok's fear and shock. He took the old man's hand in his. The fingers felt like ice, but this time there was no pain, and the room stayed fixed before his eyes.
I am here,
he said, his voice low and firm.
I am with you.
The astropath's head twitched, and Gulok felt the withered fingers return his grasp.
I am here, he said again. We are not alone. Help is coming.